Hi, this is Andrew Needle. I'm a board certified civil trial lawyer in Miami, Florida. I've been practicing for unbelievably over 40 years. Over the course of those years, I've handled just about every kind of case imaginable. These days, I focus mostly on medical malpractice litigation, catastrophic injuries, and very large personal injury cases and complex personal injury cases. And today, we're going to be talking about alternative dispute resolution. And most of you, if you're familiar with it, have heard the term mediation. Alternative dispute resolution usually falls into the category of either mediation or arbitration. We're going to be talking about mediation today. And in addition to being a board certified civil trial lawyer, I'm also a certified circuit civil mediator recognized by the state of Florida. Now, what does that mean? It means that I have passed an extensive course that is given under the auspices of the Florida Supreme Court, and that has resulted in my qualification to be certified and represent myself to be certified as a mediator in circuit court general jurisdiction. Now, the circuit court is the primary trial court in Florida. It's the main trial court. And general jurisdiction is where all cases go of, as it sounds like, general jurisdiction. If it's a personal injury case, if it's a transactional case, such as a commercial litigation, property dispute, that's where it winds up. There are other divisions such as family and juvenile, and there are specific mediation certifications for family court and criminal court. But we, my election was to be a general jurisdiction circuit court mediator. So let's talk about mediation. Why is it there? Why do we have alternative dispute resolution? Well, probably around 30, 35 years ago, there started to be a national trend among trial court judges to explore ways to get cases out of the system. And what I mean by getting them out of the system, it means finding ways for the case to be resolved short of having them set for trial or go to trial. Now, the reality is that most cases, even back then, used to settle. Probably anywhere from 70 to 75% of all cases used to settle back then. But they would settle because lawyers would set them for trial, which would clog up the dockets, and also result in greater expenditure for the litigants. So meaning the parties. So they came up with a system that would try and keep these cases from having to be set for trial or go to trial have them settle outside of the circuit courtroom. Now, the number of cases that have been settled as a result of the mediation process has gone up. Okay, so the percentage is probably, closer to I'd say 90%, just off the top of my head, as far as how many cases will settle before going to trial. When you go through alternative dispute resolution, it increases the chances that your case will settle. Now, why would someone want to do this? And do you have to go through this? Well, originally it was a voluntary process. And as it became more popular and the courts realized that it was successful and it was helping to clear their dockets, they began to make it mandatory. And so, at least in the state of Florida, certainly in Miami-Dade County, Fort Lauderdale, which is Broward County, West Palm Beach, which is Palm Beach County, the three major population centers in Southeast Florida, as well as in the Tampa Bay area, which would be Tampa and St. Petersburg, meaning Hillsborough County or Pinellas County. You have to mediate. The courts direct you to go to mediation before your case can go to trial. Cases can be mediated more than once. Cases can be mediated either before filing suit. Cases can be mediated while they're in suit. Now, obviously, if they're mediated before filing suit, the court hasn't directed you to be there, so that's voluntary. But once you file your lawsuit, at some point, the court is going to tell you, hey, parties, you have to go mediate your case. Now, what happens when that mediation order is entered? Once the mediation order is entered, the court may appoint a mediator off of a list of qualified mediators. Now, you don't have to be a certified mediator in order to mediate a case. However, most mediators are certified, and if you're on the court's list, then you are certified. If the parties don't agree on who the mediator should be, if the court appoints one, they can ask the court to appoint somebody different. Often the order will say, parties have X number of days to select a mediator. If no mediator is selected, then a mediator will be selected off of the court's rotation. Parties generally want to select their own mediators rather than leaving it up to a rotational wheel and winding up with a mediator who may be less skilled, less experienced, or frankly, just not very good. So parties generally will exchange a list of mediators. In complex cases, it usually comes down to mediators who are acceptable to the defense. Now, the plaintiff can object to a particular mediator, but because the people with the money, the defendants, the insurance companies, they usually will say, we find these mediators to be acceptable. And so you'll get a list. If there's somebody that you don't like, then just tell them, nope, give me some more people. Eventually, you'll wind up with a mediator that's agreeable, and then you'll schedule it. Now, because mediation has become mandatory in just about all cases throughout the state, there is, I guess, it's a paradox. There are more mediators than ever, okay, but the mediators that are in demand, meaning the ones who are skilled and respected and found to be effective, seem to be in short supply. So these days, mediations get scheduled usually months in advance because media schedules are just full. Complex cases usually require at least a full day of mediation, starting at usually 10 o'clock in the morning and going until whenever the parties agree to conclude it. Mediation may last more than a single day if the parties agree. Mediation is not done until the parties say it's done. If parties can't agree, the mediator can do something called declare an impasse. But for the most part, it's going to go on as long as the parties are willing to continue to keep negotiating. Now, what is the role of a mediator? The mediator is not a decision maker. The mediator's role is to be a facilitator, to help the parties understand their respective positions, what their risks are, and what possible paths there may be to find resolution in the case. Now, obviously, some cases are not going to resolve. But since there's risk to both parties in going to trial, there's always risk because you're going to have six people deciding your case in Florida, 12 in other jurisdictions. But in Florida, it's six people on a civil jury. These are six strangers. These are six people that you've not known before. These are six people who don't know you. These are six people who are going to decide the outcome of your case. And the only input that you're going to have is the evidence that may be put on by your lawyer. They're going to tell you how much your case is worth, if it's worth anything at all. When you're in mediation, though, you've got some degree of control because you can tell the other side, this is how much we want to resolve the case, or these are the other terms that we want associated with settlement of the case. And by working out an agreement, you've got control over the outcome. You're not going to have control over the outcome if you go into court in front of a jury of six people. So that's some pretty strong motivation to want to try and work things out. Now, cases get tried usually because there are problems. But if those problems can be overcome, or at least if people perceive the risk benefit to be greater in settling the case, those cases get settled. Cases go to trial because clients may have unrealistic expectations. Cases get tried because there just simply is not any evidence that there's fault on the part of the defendant in the case, and they think they want to take their chances in front of a jury. So if unless the case is really bad, or the client has unrealistic expectations, or the lawyer has set unrealistic expectations, there's a good chance that the mediator will be able to direct the parties towards some sort of resolution. Now, that's really what mediation is about. It's about self-direction. The mediator will make suggestions about what are the strong points of your case, what are the weak points as they perceive it. They're not going to tell you what to do. They can't tell you what to do. Ethically, they're prohibited from making those decisions. There are circumstances in which the mediator may offer an opinion about the value of your case, but it's really not common, and it's really not the preferred way to go. There are circumstances in which the mediator can be turned into an arbitrator who is a decision maker, but that's beyond the topic of mediation that I want to discuss today, and probably would take up, you know, at least another half hour to discuss how you turn a mediator into an arbitrator and what happens when you do that. But putting that aside, the mediator will introduce themselves, will have the parties introduce themselves. The mediator will generally say things to try and calm the waters. There may be instances in which parties will make opening statements. Other times, parties may choose not to make opening statements. Their positions may be such that making an opening statement will only harden their positions and make settlement more difficult. That is something that has to be discussed with the attorneys for the parties about whether they think that making an opening statement would be beneficial or not. The mediator under those circumstances can make a suggestion saying, maybe we should skip the mediation opening at this point in time. But the idea is just to get the process going in a comfortable manner. Now, since the pandemic, things changed. Before the pandemic, mediations all used to be in person. People would meet in the conference room. They would look each other in the eye. They would assess each other personally. After an opening statement, if one was made, the parties would then break up and go into what are called caucus rooms, meaning they'd be separated while the mediator would separately discuss the case with the parties themselves. What's discussed with the mediator is confidential. What goes on in mediation is confidential by law. If you're participating in the mediation process, you cannot talk about what went on there. You can't share what went on there with your friends, with your family, or social media. It's confidential. So what will then happen is the mediator will talk to one side, usually the defense side first, and find out what their view of the case is. After assessing what flexibility there may be in their position, the mediator will then go and talk to the plaintiff's side. Now, since the pandemic, we don't have very many mediations that are live. They still occur, but they're really, I think, less popular, much less popular these days. It occurs now on a Zoom platform where we all appear on a screen. We all watch videos. And the parties will all meet on the same screen at the beginning while the introductions are made. And then the mediator will put them into separate rooms on the Zoom platform or Microsoft Teams platform or whatever particular video platform is being used. Here in Florida, it's Zoom most frequently, almost exclusively. And the parties then sit in their own little rooms, private rooms, and the mediator then goes back and forth virtually between the rooms, discussing each party's position. Now, a good mediator is more than just a messenger. You can't just say, okay, we want X number of dollars to settle the case, and then take that information to the other side and say, they want X number of dollars to settle the case. And then they'll say, well, we're not paying X number of dollars. We're only going to pay X minus 50. That's being a messenger. Okay. A good mediator will discuss why a particular demand was made. A good mediator will discuss what alternatives there may be and what common ground there may be for reaching a settlement. That good mediator will then communicate that information back to the other room, or rooms, as the case may be, if there are multiple parties, and will only communicate the information that they're given permission to communicate. Remember, I mentioned that it's supposed to be confidential. So what you tell your mediator remains in the mediator's head. It's not communicated to the other side unless they obtain your permission to tell them that. Hopefully, by going back and forth with an understanding of what each party really wants to get out of the mediation, or what each party needs to get out of the mediation, there'll be able to be a common ground found in the mediation, which allows the case to settle. Now, a good mediator is a creative problem solver. They'll come up with ideas that one party or the other may not have thought about. They may point out a weakness in the case without suggesting that that particular weakness is going to result in a loss. But the mediator will hopefully open the eyes of one party or the other as to the fact that the particular weakness in the case will increase the likelihood that the case may be lost. You don't tell the party to settle because your case is going to be lost. It's a matter of self-determination. If the party determines that they don't want to take the chance of going to trial, then they'll settle. Okay. Once there's an agreement between the two parties, the mediator will reduce the agreement to writing. Both parties and their attorneys have to sign, and that's binding. Okay. And it's then reported to the court. Now, what happens if you don't get a mediation successfully concluded? Well, as I mentioned earlier, you can continue it to another session, or you can declare an impasse, meaning the parties are stuck. If there's an impasse, that's reported to the court, and the court will not require additional mediation, except if the court decides that it would still be potentially beneficial. Courts can do that. Judges can point out to the parties, because they're decision makers, that they perceive weaknesses here or strengths there, or it might be a really good idea if you folks go back and you mediate this case. So you may get sent back to mediation even though it's impasse, because the judge is sending you a signal that it's in your best interest to get this case resolved. Most judges won't do that, but there are many that do. What goes on in the mediation, other than the fact of impasse, is not made known to the court. So if the case doesn't settle and you go to court, the judge is not going to learn that so-and-so offered to settle for X number of dollars and the other side wouldn't accept it, or they would only pay so much. That's information that remains confidential. The court does not find that out. Okay. The only thing the court knows is that the matter was impassed. If the case is continued, or if the mediation is continued, and the parties agree that they'll come back at a later point in time, the judge doesn't know why, the judge doesn't know the details, that's all kept confidential. And so the important thing is that you've got a mediator that you can trust, that has got some degree of objectivity, and who, when you tell them things, they will remain confidential unless you agree that that can be shared with the other side. Sometimes during mediations, the lawyers may have more flexibility than peers, and they don't want to tip their hand in front of the client because too much information given to the client may harden the client's position unrealistically. So sometimes a mediator will just say, I would like to just meet with the attorneys privately. And so they'll have a little private caucus of their own to find out what's really going on. You know, what are the dynamics? Because that's all this really is. It's interpersonal dynamics. There are entire courses and programs that are taught at Harvard University on mediation and negotiation. That's kind of where a lot of this comes from. And the techniques that are utilized to try and get the parties to agree, to get the parties on common ground, come from research and techniques that have been developed there. It's not the only place where they're developed. There are other programs around the country where these techniques are taught. And there's a very good book that's been written called Getting to Yes. Okay, what do you need to do to get to yes? A good mediator understands, usually innately, what you need to do to get to yes. Now, the mediation itself, I mentioned, can go on until the parties say enough is enough. When it's on Zoom, there is an advantage because one of the things that used to happen a lot when people were in actual physical mediations in each other's presence is that the decision maker, the adjuster from the insurance company, might say, hey, I've got to catch a plane at 3 o'clock. So if this isn't settled by 2 o'clock, you know, it's over, it's done. Okay. Since you're appearing virtually and that adjuster is probably sitting in his office and at his home office, meaning, you know, somewhere in Indiana or in Texas or in New York, as opposed to just sitting in their home, although frankly, they could be home working remotely as well. You don't have that anymore. No one needs to leave to catch a plane anymore. There may be other things interfering, but you don't have that sort of pressure to get something done by a particular point in time. Now, from a negotiation standpoint, that's a good and a bad thing. When you know the clock is expiring and you have to get it done by a particular time, you'll get it done. You know, it often happens in labor negotiations. You know that there's going to be a strike at a certain hour, so you're motivated to get it done because the strike's going to be a bad thing. Same thing in mediation. If you know it's got to be done by a particular point in time, then the parties get motivated to get serious about negotiating. Now, a good deal of this is just simple negotiation, going back and forth. Lawyers before mediation used to settle just by picking up the phone and calling each other and discussing these things. That's really kind of a lost art these days. And people have become very dependent on this alternative dispute resolution, in particular mediation, to communicate with one another. It's a lost art of talking directly to the other side and trying to hammer out a deal. But what often happens when a case doesn't get settled in mediation and the mediator says, all right, I'm going to leave it open. I'm not going to declare an impasse. We'll just advise the court that there'll be subsequent negotiations, possibly another mediation. When that happens, the lawyers very often will just pick up the phone and talk to each other, understanding from the mediation what the positions are. And having been armed with that information, they'll get the case settled. The mediator may also encourage the parties to talk privately while the mediation is pending the next session. These are all techniques that can be used to try and reach a resolution. But the important thing to know is that mediation has advantages. Mediation in the case, short of preparing your case for trial, saves a lot of money. A complex malpractice case will probably cost at least $100,000 just getting to the point of being able to mediate. If mediation fails and you've got to prepare it for trial, you can plan on doubling or tripling that number. So it could be another $200,000 or $300,000 in costs that are being rung up while the case continues to be put together. If you try that case, that number may double again. You may wind up spending $500,000 in trial or more. That's money that's directly coming out of somebody's pocket. And if a case can be resolved early through alternative dispute resolution, it's going to, number one, obviously, be resolved and done with, and the parties can each either get their money or know that the litigation has concluded and there's closure and they can go on with their lives or business lives if it's impairing on their credit. And it also is an opportunity to save just a ton of money. Okay. Not just time, but money. So that significant savings that can occur if mediation is successful can be very, very beneficial to a party. And if a lawyer understands how expensive litigation is, especially in complex personal injury cases, then very often you've got a way to find a path forward because the net amount that you're going to be putting in your client's pocket can be the same during mediation as it would be if you went to trial, were successful, and got twice that amount, but you've had to wait a year, 2 years until your case gets to trial, maybe longer if it's got to go on appeal. There may be serious need for funds before then. So earlier resolution through alternative dispute processes can be very beneficial to the parties. And that's concluding what I've got to tell you about mediation today. If you've ever been through it, or if you've got a lawsuit and you're going to have mediation coming up, what I've told you today are things that you're going to see occur in that mediation process. So hopefully some of this information will make you more comfortable when you get into the process. Thanks for your time. I'm very appreciative that you've watched this podcast, and catch me next time when we talk about the next issue involved in the litigation process. Thank you.